When we have a hard time getting the right words out to say just what we mean, when the print in the phone book looks a little fuzzy, when we really struggle to toss that ball into our little catcher's waiting mitt, we have a quick glimpse of what our children may be going through if they have difficulties in speech, vision, or motor development. Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, we continue our program on children's development in language, vision, and motor skills, and what parents should be watching for. Joining us again are Nancy Weiss, a speech and language pathologist who specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of children ages 2 through 9 with communication disorders. We're glad you could join us, Nancy.
It's nice to be here again.
Dr. Lynn Balzer-Martin is a pediatric occupational therapist. Her interest is in on-site screening of nursery school children. Welcome.
It's nice to be here.
And Dr. Nancy Lewis is a behavioral optometrist with a focus on learning-related visual issues in children 9 months through adolescence. We're happy to have you with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Lynn, we're going to deal with your area. Can you talk about the connection between motor development and reading or other learning skills?
Well, this is a good lead-in. When occupational therapists look at movement in children, one of the things we're looking for is a child competent physically to enjoy themselves recreationally, to get aerobic exercise? Every child certainly doesn't need to be an athlete. The broader issue is the way in which motor development reflects brain processing of information, because the same kinds of information we use to develop good motor skills is really a foundation for language, for vision, for higher level academics. And it can affect a child's behavior and emotional development, things like attention, activity level. So I would go back to these kind of basics of touch, body position, movement, and gravity. Those basic sensory areas tell us a lot about how the brain is processing information. And that's the way in which motor development ties in with reading and other later academics of all types.
Dr. Nancy, what can parents do to encourage their children's visual development?
Depends on the age of the child, but if you have an infant, the best things that you can do to them is work with the senses that are not fully developed, but better developed, which is touch and, you know, their sense of hearing. Talk to them, look at them, make faces at them, rub their bodies. And you know, when you carry your child, you should carry them on your right shoulder, or left shoulder, upside down. I mean, all these different views, and it gives a child a chance to see the world differently. You know, hold them upside down. I mean, it's really cool, and kids love that. As your child gets older and can sit by themselves, give them interesting things to play with. Blocks are fantastic. Brightly colored blocks, things that they can put in their mouth and chew. And there are lots of blocks out there if you don't want to give them wood, if you're freaked about that. You know, that spongy stuff that you can give them. You want to work with lots of different textures with kids also. Play games with them where you show them the doll and then you take a towel or, you know, a little baby blanket and cover the doll. What happened to the doll? You know, and you make it a game. And, you know, after a while, they're gonna search for that doll underneath there. They have a sense now, they have an image in their head that this is a permanent thing, and just because you put a blanket on top of it doesn't mean that it's gone. Once your child starts walking, take them on walks, go for hikes, and I recommend this for everyone. I think it's the most important thing is to go out as a family and take walks, and even your 18-month-old can walk for a certain amount, and you want to look at things. You want to point to birds and look up at trees, and when you're going for a hike, you can come across a puddle, and you can say, well, you know, do you think we can walk in that puddle? Do you think it's really deep or kind of shallow? Maybe we can walk around it. Maybe we can jump over it. So the child then is beginning to use their eyes to make decisions about moving through space. You can come across the path and there's a log that's in your way. Well, can we crawl underneath it or should we go over top of it? Climbing on rocks. All of these things are very important. This is working with eye-hand, eye-body, eye-foot, you know, whatever, coordination. It's much better than sitting in front of a computer or a TV. Talk to your child as you're looking at things, especially, again, I talked before about looking at a book, and those books that are very familiar to children that you might not like yourself. Ours was a little engine that could, went on forever and ever, but you know, as you're reading that book, you're pointing to pictures. You're asking a child to talk about it and to look at it. And they have a sense of what that is on the page. And children, when they're very young, have something called eidetic visualization, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, where they can look at a page. And if they close their eyes, they can sort of project that and see that page. It's supposed to be very low-level visualization as opposed to higher-level visualization where you don't actually see a picture inside your head. But these you want a child to get a sense of what's on the page, and they can close their eyes and you can, you know, what color was that girl's dress? And you can sort of talk about things. And this helps to build those skills that they need for school. As a child gets older, and I'm talking maybe, you know, your first or second graders, getting into a sort of a non-competitive sport situation is wonderful. Soccer is probably the best game that was ever invented. It's a big ball. It's on the ground. It's wonderful aerobic exercise. It works with a lot of spatial aspects. The child is running around. They can kick the ball every once in a while. It's just a really good movement, eye, foot, you know.
And from a motor viewpoint, nobody knows if you made a mistake or did it right. It's not like being, not like making the third out in a baseball game or something.
Right.
It's wonderful because kids get a lot of exercise and fun, and they still aren't pointed at in terms of their degree of motor skill. They
That's
can just
right.
be in there and be part of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You know, anything to do with vision. I mean, vision is learned. Your vision develops over time, and it's learned. And really, the only way to learn is to have movement involved. I mean, that's really the key. And again, Dr. Lynn will talk more about that. But that's where vision, you know, what vision therapists and occupational therapists, where we hook up, is that whole movement area. It's very important for mm-hmm. parents. You know, again, parents are always talking about what's the best computer program I can get my kid for, you know, reading readiness. Well, for me, the best thing you can do for reading readiness is to read to your child. Read, read, read all the time. Again, I always recommend, and I like myself, I like poetry. Again, it's that repetition of words and rhyming words. And it's wonderful for a kid to sort of snuggle up with you, you know, at night, and they're sitting in the bed. And, you know, reading then is sort of equated with warmth and love, and it's the love of language, which is what Nancy's
going to
talk about.
I was waiting to everything is integrated.
It's true. It is. Everything is integrated. You know, we're talking about, you know, vision, we're talking about motor, we're talking about language, but it's the whole child. You really can't dissect the child. Everything is related.
I think really I wanted to jump in earlier when you were describing the hikes in the woods and talking through the experiences and should we go around the puddle or through it or those kinds of things, depending on the age of the child, would be really very, very useful in terms of stimulating new concepts verbally. And what would be really nice is after the hike, when you're back home and relaxed, then kind of recap for the child or ask them to do it if they are capable, what happened, and in the order of events, try to have them retell you what happened, what they liked most, but also what happened first and what happened later. And that's really a good kind of language stimulating.
Mm-hmm. I would think that a camera would be a good thing in these situations too.
Then
they could recap later on.
That's
even
true.
That's
but
daddy,
you know, sometimes
and that's
me. A picture in your head is much
really better
than the actual picture. I mean, I always think of people who film the birth of their children. It's something that I want to remember the way I remember it. You know, I don't actually want the reality of it. I want my interpretation of it. And you know, at times I think if you're working with language, it's your interpretation of it. I mean, that's kind
I
of what
I think also
we're
a child could actually produce their own pictures also mm-hmm. of the highlights of the experience mm-hmm. from their own perspective.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess I would like to make a comment that will tie in too, because we're hearing about doing things that are more simplified in terms of children benefiting from them later, not getting on a computer really early to have a lot of the real physiologic skills that make you able to do it later. I'll tell you a quick anecdote. I'm in a reading group, but we have a seminar leader, someone who's very scholarly, and she read Beatrix Potter to her three children ad nauseum. She said, nothing can develop an ear for the English language better, and that's kind of like Dr. Nancy saying with poetry. I think the modern parent is jumping ahead often a little too intensely.
Yes. A lot of parents ask me, you know, when should I start reading to my kid? Well, of course, I always say the second they pop out. You know, there are nursery rhymes, and poetry, I think, is really wonderful for kids because of language and the cadence of words. But with a child at 6 months, you can sit, them on your lap, and you can point to things, and they can point to things, and you can tell them what it is. And, you know, the more they look at things and the more you talk about it, they're going to get a sense of what something is. A child who takes a hard ball and feels it, or a fluffy ball, you know, one of those koosh balls, and feels that, you can talk about how it feels, even with a child that's 6 to 8 months old. And then when that ball goes away, sometimes you can talk about balls, and a child will get an image in their head, and they'll search out things. And you'll start seeing when a child starts to crawl and to creep, they're searching out things in their environment. Visualization is something that's very important for education or school readiness, because a child needs to be able to, when they start reading and you know, looking at symbols, these words, they need to get sort of an image in their head about what something is. I mean, that word, that the word apple that you see, well, they've tasted an apple and they've smelled an apple and they've looked at it and they've even listened to it. You know, they've used all their senses and they have a sense of what apple is. And when they do start reading, when they're in first or second grade, that word apple then will bring all of these feelings to them. A child that has had primary experiences where they've tasted things and felt things can then use their eyes when they're much older and look at something and know what it feels like and know what it tastes like.
Nancy, what is receptive language developmental screening? Would you clarify all of that whole issue for us, please?
Receptive language in itself, first of all, has to do with one's ability to focus on incoming verbal information, process it meaningfully. So at the age of an infant or a toddler, it's a question of sorting sounds out, distinguishing one specific speech sound from another, and then ultimately hearing a string of sounds into the integration of a meaningful word. At later ages, it has to do with really what we just call language comprehension, understanding messages that are addressed to you, whether they be questions, directions, or casual conversation.
We're now going to switch to a different subject here. And Dr. Lin, how would you differentiate between normal and slow or difficult physical development?
Well, when we look at motor development in children, I think parents have a lot of good resources nowadays for finding checklists for going to Gazelle or many of the other newer books for babies and children, and finding out at what time does one expect a child to do certain things. So I think what's more important is then to begin to differentiate not just how quick or slow a child is in this development, but qualitatively, what does it look like when it's normal and what signals to you that there might be some difficulty? To tie in with some of the things Dr. Nancy talked about, children have these reflexes that she described a little bit when they're young. For instance, parents often say, look how strong their child is, because when you put your finger in their hand, they hold on. In fact, you can practically lift a child by that grasp reflex. But around 6 to 9 months of age, these reflexes begin to disappear. So it's normal for them to exist, but it's also normal for the child to have them fade or to be losing them. So one early sign might be when reflexes persist much longer than you'd expect. Things like if you turn the baby's head and the arm on the head side goes out straight. So losing the primitive, we call them, or baby reflexes, is one nice sign that your child's motor development is beginning to come along well, even in that first year. Another thing is midline. And children, when they're very young, will reach for something on their left side with their left hand and on the right side with the right hand. As they get into those toddler and preschool years, they do something we call crossing the midline of the body. And as they begin to have a favored hand, that hand will cross over, or either hand may cross just to touch something or grab something on the other side. So that's another developmental milestone, that your nervous system is integrated well, so the motor system is coming along in a positive way. And also using the two sides of the body together, just as Dr. Nancy said, the two eyes have to be used in concert. Seeing a child toward that end of the first year doing patty cake, clapping, putting the two hands together. Those kind of activities, when you can bring the hands together and use them both to do the same thing, and then a little later on, maybe using one hand to hold a cup and the other hand to put some little blocks into the cup. So two sides of the body being used together is another very normal kind of thing. If you see a youngster seeming to very much favor one side of the body or to kind of neglect the other side, to develop one side well, but the other side doesn't seem to kind of exist for them, then that's not a particularly normal sequence, and that's something that you might raise questions about. Also, when children are having difficulty with their motor development, such that you might say, gee, my child isn't just a little slower reaching the milestones, but perhaps there's something else I want to investigate, this may have to do with muscle tone. Now, Dr. Nancy said when you have an eye turn, it's not necessarily a muscle problem. It may be the way the brain is interpreting and interacting with vision. And the same could be said for motor development in general. What we see a lot of nowadays is children with what we call low muscle tone. And those children are not weak, and there's nothing wrong with their muscles, but the brain isn't sending enough messages to the muscles to tell them to have enough oomph, kind of, to have enough tension in them. So these are children who might look a little more loose and floppy. They might be tending to prefer to lie down than sit up, or they'd rather sit than stand. And they may get tired just awfully quickly from physical activity. Their grasp on objects might be loose. So I think muscle tone is another indicator that helps us kind of separate a normal quality of development from a youngster who may have some difficulty. But I think the important thing for parents is to distinguish when a child is just a little slow, kind of a late bloomer, and when a child is having a problem that you want to look into.
Are there certain kinds of behaviors that parents would notice immediately? I mean, I know I had one son that never learned to hold on. And that was terrifying to me. I mean, it turned out that he did need some kind of occupational therapy, but that was a real extreme. I mean, you know how babies grasp when you pick them up and they hold on to your shoulder? And I had this bag of cement.
Right, you
basically.
Felt like
you felt like 200 pounds.
Felt like you had a sack of potatoes because you mean he wasn't kind of grabbing back. You didn't feel the tension,
right.
And that's muscle tone.
Right.
A child who doesn't have that much oomph, mm-hmm. and so you feel like they're more loose or floppy. Mm-hmm. When a child is really noticeable to you for that, that's a good thing to check out. That's something we can help children improve with rather easily. A little bit of help goes a long way for a young child who's experiencing something like that.
Okay.
Dr. Nancy, when should a child first have vision screening and by whom?
Of course, my bias is by a developmental or a behavioral optometrist. I would say if there's no problem in the family, probably by about age 3 is a nice time to bring your child in. There are many things that we can look at. Of course, we're looking to see that, you know, the child is binocular, using both eyes. We can check focusing, which is their ability to maintain and sustain clear vision up close. We look to see whether they've developed concepts of big and small and, you know, things like that. But, you know, there are many things that we look at. We also check the eye health of a child, and we use a very bright light and we look in through the pupil. And occasionally this is uncomfortable for a child, but it's something I think that needs to be done at an early age. After you see a child at age 3, if there are no problems at all, you know, and I always give, you know, development suggestions to parents because everybody needs that, we'd like to see a child every year after that. If there's a child that I find that's at risk at all, we usually like to see them at 4 to 6 months after that first evaluation. There are many times when there are things that you can do with a child at 3 if you find that there's some developmental problems. Occasionally you can do something, again, called vision therapy, which is something that we do where it's a more intensive program where a child comes into the office and works with a therapist. Occasionally, this works out a lot better if a child is older, obviously, but it can be done with a 3-year-old. There are times when there are many things that are done at home, and one of those things might be that you put a pair of lenses or glasses on a child to be worn inside, and we call these developmental lenses. These are not lenses that are compensatory at all, but they're therapeutic. And for many children who have trouble with binocularity, we use something called plus lenses or low plus lenses. They're not very strong. They tend to magnify information. And it occasionally helps to organize the visual system. And the child puts these on when they're doing their coloring or other, you know, puzzles, close-up things. When they're outside and doing their motor activities, they don't wear the lenses at all. This is especially important if I see a child that has some problems that I see when they're in school age. So your 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds. Many times I'll recommend lenses that they use for homework and for close-up work, indoor use. And again, these are therapeutic or developmental, and they're not compensatory.
Dr. Lynn, what should parents look for in seeking a professional to consult for a suspected problem?
I think they want to make sure that the professional has experience with the age group of your youngster, because even within our respective professions, not everyone works with children. And then those who do, some just have a knack for working with the very young child, some for school age. It's more challenging to find people sometimes who have expertise with adolescents. So I think someone who has experience in pediatrics and then someone who has some particular skill with the age child you're bringing to them. I think also in what you're hearing today, between the three of us, there is a lot of crossover. As we find out more and more about brain development, we know how much more commonality there is in fields where people are doing therapeutic work that have to do with young children. So I think you'd like to find someone who isn't just working in isolation, but who really knows about fellow professionals and when to make proper referrals or consult or collaborate with them.
Well, we have been very lucky to find professionals who could consult and collaborate with us and with each other, obviously. We'd like to thank our guests, Nancy Weiss, Dr. Lynn Bowser-Martin, and Dr. Nancy Lewis, for their insight and guidance. Because of time constraints today, we'll discuss these topics in greater depth on future programs. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective.
If you would like to send suggestions, comments, or questions to Parents' Perspective, you can email us at parentspr@aol.com or contact us, care of this station. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burton.